Have you ever seen one of those warm and fuzzy commercials, because they are so, about how great giant banks are? You know the kind, with compelling background music and shots of families and so-called diverse average people touting its dedication to combating climate change or helping small businesses. You've seen them. Of course you have. These are the same banks who caused the mortgage crisis and financial collapse in 2008, and who muscled their way to obtain PPP grants during the pandemic for wealthy clients at the expense of those who really needed the money. Many are still funding fossil fuels. Needless to say, a lot of us are skeptical of these slick marketing campaigns, and for good reason. With me to explain is Andy Morrison, Associate Director of the New Economy Project, who recently awarded prizes of dishonor to banks for their actions. You know the saying, actions speak louder than words. Andy, welcome back to Living for the City.
Thank you, Michael. Excited to be here.
Okay, let's get right to these awards these awards of dishonor to the banks for their actions. Let's start with the worst bank awards, and then we'll talk a little bit about their actions.
Yeah, so this was a street theater style action that we and our partners in the Public Bank NYC Coalition organized recently. And it's actually the second time we've done it. You laid it out really nicely, because the banks have very effective, well-paid public relations teams that advance the bank's agenda through a lot of misinformation. So we wanted to get the facts out there about how banks are behaving and not serving communities equitably in New York City, how they are exacerbating the climate crisis through massive financing of fossil fuels, and so much more. And so we got out there, and I'm happy to kind of unveil the awards with you this morning.
Yes. Okay. So let's start with are there top five? Are there five banks that you've dishonored?
Dishonored themselves.
You didn't dishonor them.
They dishonored themselves. Communities.
Yes.
Yeah. We created categories.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go through the categories.
Okay.
And the punchline for us, which I'll also enjoy sharing with your listeners, is we're calling for a public bank as an alternative to the status quo banks that are doing so much harm. So these are the categories that we came up with the Public Bank NYC Coalition. So the first one was worst climate destroyer. And that, you know, all the big banks are investing mightily in fossil fuels. Mm. But the worst of the worst was JP Morgan Chase.
Mm.
And this is according to the Rainforest Action Network. JP Morgan Chase has invested $382 billion in fossil fuels since 2016, when the Paris Agreement was signed. And in some years, it's actually, you know, increased. It's fluctuated, but, you know, despite the warning calls from scientists and the harm that we're seeing every day around the world and here in New York City, they're continuing to pump massive sums of money into the fossil fuel industry.
Hmm. Okay, so we have worst climate destroyer. What else do we have?
We did worst funder of bad landlords. So we looked at a report by the Right to Counsel NYC Coalition that named some of the worst evictors in New York City. And then they actually went even deeper and found out who, which banks these evictors, landlord, eviction specialists were working with. And we found that Capital One and Signature Bank were the worst of the worst when it comes to financing bad landlords in New York City.
Okay, so that's Capital One and Signature are the worst in terms of bad landlords.
That's right.
Okay, and next, what's next?
The next one was worst redliner of communities of color.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked at FDIC data to see where banks are opening branches. And in New York City, there's a long-standing practice, and of course around the country, but in New York City, you know, we've looked at this for years and found that there are, and anyone who lives in New York City knows this just, you know, by walking around the city.
Sure.
Or living in your neighborhood, that predominantly white communities have, you know, vastly more bank branches than communities of color.
Mm.
And this creates an enormous problem for communities, because when banks fail to serve communities, predatory and fringe financial actors fill the void. And so there's whole swaths of communities of color around the city that are relegated to these high-cost check cashers and pawn shops and other services that exist to strip wealth from their neighborhoods.
Mm.
So we called out the worst of the worst, which was Wells Fargo. Now, Wells Fargo has only one branch outside of Manhattan, and it's in Riverdale, up in the Bronx. And looking at all their branches, we found that only 17% of their branches are in communities of color. And we're talking about a city where 69% of the population lives in communities that are at least 50% people of color. So it's a massive injustice, and we called out Wells Fargo and dishonored them with this award.
Mm. I'm going to ask you for another category of bad banking practices, but I'd like you to talk a little bit more about these, like these payday lenders and these check cashing places, and what are, I mean, I really don't need to go into it, because people in the community, they know what it is and how much extra they have to pay to cash their checks. But go on to the next category, and then we'll circle back.
Okay, great. Yeah. Well, I'll give you one more. This one was very timely. We called it the worst pandemic profiteer. And we actually, J.P. Morgan Chase got this one as well, and we also gave it to Citibank. For J.P. Morgan Chase, we gave them the worst pandemic profiteer award because we did some research during the pandemic, as we saw banks charging massive fees to struggling folks, in the throes of the pandemic. And we looked at data that we were able to approximate the amount of fees that were being charged just in New York. So we found that banks had siphoned $1.7 billion in fees from New Yorkers during the pandemic. $1.3 billion of that was just here in New York City alone. Mm-hmm. And among the banks that were extracting money through these fees during the first year of the pandemic, J.P. Morgan Chase was by far the worst. We estimated that Chase had taken almost $600 million just in predatory overdraft fees, which are fees that really hit struggling account holders the hardest, people who are, you know, maybe living paycheck to paycheck. And then the bank charges them these egregious $35 fees when they dip below, you mm-hmm. know, their account.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a problem that, you know, hits, you know, black and brown and low income folks the hardest. So that's why we gave it to JP Morgan Chase. And then Citibank had also been called out for prioritizing its wealthier customers for PPP loans during the pandemic. And as a result, a lot of small businesses around the city and throughout the country were relegated to, in some cases, costlier or not being able to get PPP loans at all, you know, because they weren't forgiven or so forth. So those were the two awards we gave out for Pandemic Profiteer.
Chase and Citibank. Andy Morrison, we spoke about these payday lenders and these check-cashing institutions that dot the community here in New York, particularly, as you pointed out, black and brown and low-income communities. What are people who frequent those check-cashing places, what are they likely to see? How are they impacted?
Well, in New York, we have fought back for years to prevent the state from legalizing payday lending. So we're fortunate that in New York, we're one of, I think, 17 states around the country continues to prohibit payday lending.
Okay.
But there are other forms of, you know, high-cost financial services that New Yorkers have to deal with. And I think, as you said, people who live in these communities, they see it firsthand. They have to pay just to get their own money. They have to pay fees just to access their own wages to check cashers. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons we are pushing for a public bank and to strengthen community development credit unions, which serve New Yorkers with responsible and affordable services.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's get right to it. Let's talk about this public bank for several years here. Now, I've heard about public banking, and I think the public banking is in North Dakota. Why is it in North Dakota and not here in the state of New York on the East Coast? What is it, and how can folks get one? And is there opposition to that?
Yeah, so that's the answer to your question about why there isn't one yet here in New York. It's because there's very strong opposition from the banking lobby. The Bank of North Dakota was started more than 100 years ago. It was started through a populist movement in North Dakota, populist farmers. And now there's a really exciting movement here in New York City and actually growing across the state. And so for folks who might not be familiar with a public bank, what it is an institution that the city would create that could hold public deposits and then leverage those deposits, which in New York City is many, many billions of dollars, toward investments in the local economy, with a particular focus on historically redlined neighborhoods that the banks are not serving. So I think people understand how much power the banks wield, but they might not know how intertwined Wall Street is with our city government.
Mm-hmm.
So again, the city collects about $100 billion in revenue, and right now, by law, that money has to be held in commercial banks. So it's deposited there sort of on its way to, you know, to paying for services, and the banks get to profit from that. So what we're saying is let's redirect that money from these banks that we just talked about, you know, are doing so much harm in our communities and to the planet, and let's put it in an institution that we control that can invest in public and community needs. For example, around climate resiliency and community-owned solar to increase affordable housing and community land trusts throughout the city to actually support black-owned small businesses and worker-owned businesses throughout the city, and to partner with these community development credit unions that serve historically redlined neighborhoods and build wealth in these neighborhoods rather than extracting wealth from them.
Andy, I have an additional question, if you will. What is the status of predatory lending in the state of New York and more broadly in the United States as well? Could you just touch on that a bit?
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, there's all kinds of forms of predatory lending. We, again, as I said before, New York State is fortunate that we have a really strong usury law, which makes it a criminal offense to charge more than 25% interest on a loan. And that's effectively what keeps payday lending out of our state, because it's a strong law that's actually strongly reinforced by state regulators. And that of course, is thanks to organizing and advocacy by groups across the state that make sure that we're being really vigilant mm-hmm. in protecting New Yorkers from predatory loans. That's not to say that that predatory lending, you know, doesn't happen, and there are certainly other ways in which banks and increasingly online lenders seek to evade these laws, find other loopholes, and otherwise exploit New Yorkers. But it's, you know, we are fortunate to have a strong usury law, and it's really important that we continue to ensure that payday lenders and other predatory actors don't undermine the strong protections that we have.
Yes, indeed. Well, it's great hearing that again and having you repeat that information as you did earlier. Thank you for that. What about in New Jersey? We have listenership in New Jersey and parts of Pennsylvania as well. Are they similarly situated?
They are, actually. The Northeast here is kind of like a stronghold for usury protections. And again, it's not to say that there aren't threats to those protections and that at times industry actors don't evade those protections. But we worked with community groups in New Jersey and Pennsylvania for many years, creating kind of a conceptual country called Payday Freelandia, which is what we imagined, a country that actually prohibited payday lending across the board. And it was those states. And we've made the case that people are actually better off when you prohibit payday lending.
I like that, Freelandia. I really like that. Now, what about if someone has an account in one of these large institutions that you made that actually made your list of worst banking practices? Can folks change their institution? Of course they can change their institution, but how would one go about that? I mean, is it just a simple matter of going in and opening an account? Do you have to close your account at the institution? What's involved here?
Yeah, well, you can move your money, as a lot of people say, and we encourage folks to go to these community development credit unions, which are community-owned institutions that are rooted in the community. They build and root wealth in the community, like the Lower East Side People's Federal Credit Union, Brooklyn Co-op Federal Credit Union, Neighborhood Trust, Uptown, and there are others.
Carver Bank.
Ones, you know,
Carver
yeah,
Bank.
Yeah, yeah, the, yeah. Yeah, like take a look at what the bank's practices are. But you can rest assured with a community development credit union that by definition they're mm-hmm. serving mm-hmm. low and moderate income households. The thing is that with a public bank, we're talking about moving money of many more orders of magnitude, because we're talking about the city's, you know, our public money, billions of dollars we can move collectively out of these institutions that are harming folks and move it into an institution that will actually serve our interests.
Andy Morrison, beside moving your money, having it in multiple places, taking it out of the these worst banking category practices, what else can listeners do? And give us some contact information for your institution and how people can become more involved.
Okay, great. Yeah, so one thing you can do is go to neweconomynyc.org/action. There's an action alert on our website, neweconomynyc.org/action. And you can take action to bring public banking to New York, contact your legislator, tell them to move forward with some really exciting legislation that is before the city council. There's another really important bill called the New York Public Banking Act before the state legislature that would make it easier for the city to get a public banking off the ground. Also, when you take a look at that action alert, there are ways you can push for community land trusts as well, which is a way for communities to own land and control land and development to stem displacement and gentrification in black and brown and immigrant neighborhoods throughout the city. So there's information there at the action alert. And people can also, when you go to our website, you can sign up to get alerts and stay up to date with what's happening at New Economy Project.
So New Economy NY, is it? Did you say NY?
NYC.
NYC. Okay, that's fantastic. There is a very interesting article in the city that the city published. When was it? In May, I think, about public bank and a bill blocked from the Senate vote after industry pushed back. And Andy Morrison, you alluded to that in the beginning of our conversation this morning. Andy, thank you so much for being with us today on Living for the City. And as the months evolve, I certainly would like to have you back to give us some updates onto this, because we should have public banking in the state of New York.
Yes, let's make it happen. And thank you, Michael. Look forward to that.
All right. Will do. Andy Morrison here on Living for the City on WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. There's more ahead. Stay tuned.